You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. Live link also at the trumpet.com. And this is Trumpet Radio Live, Monday edition. We're back from the weekend. Dwight Falk, Abraham Blondeau with you here today. And it's been, of course, an interesting weekend. The big news was all about Dallas and protests around the United States. And so nothing major, I guess, occurred over the weekend. Some arrests, as I think is to be expected when there's protesting, but nothing violent that I saw. Did you see anything that was different than that?
I just saw some videos of people being arrested in, I think, New Orleans, where they had the protests there. But I think that was the one that got the most out of hand. And I saw some videos from California, I think, where they had people trying to block the interstate and cops pushing them off the road. But I think that's the extent of it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's just interesting time that we're in. We've got one headline about that we'll talk about in a little bit. A few other headlines to get to today. Also, we'll talk about the Key of David program coming up here on KPCG and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. And then talk about some of the major events that have happened on this day in history as well. And of course, here we are in July, kind of a getting into the hot part of summer, and looking ahead for the week here in the local Edmond, Oklahoma City area, might get up to around 100, and then you always get the, here's what it really feels like, and it's always worse.
Right.
Most often worse. But do you know it's actually snowing in some parts of the country? Can you believe it?
Hardly.
Hardly. Yeah. Up in the Rockies, they say, this weather.com just says that snow has fallen in the northern Rockies to start the week. The snow was reported at elevations as low as 6,500 feet. A taste of winter weather swept into the northern Rockies Sunday into early Monday, where snow was reported in parts of Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. And a Monday morning, a light coating of snow could be seen on an Idaho webcam at Lost Trail Pass. So if you're going to Lost Trail Pass today, look out. A little bit of snow. It's always funny. You don't think about snow in July. So did you ever have snow in July up in Canada?
No, in July. We've had it, I think, as late as May and June. It's very, very infrequent. I think it was just once in my lifetime so far. But it does happen time to time, and we're pretty low where I used to live, pretty low. It's not very elevated. So it just got cold, and the storm system blew in there.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I not that I'm looking for winter to come anytime soon, but it was kind of nice. They had a little picture there at weather.com, and just a little dusting of snow. And it's about, you know, it's getting close to 100 degrees here. I thought that would be nice, a little change of pace.
Yeah.
Particularly when I'm trying to fall asleep at night. It'd be nice to be able to make that happen. But so anyway, there is some snow in July that flies in the face of global warming, I guess. Or maybe not. Maybe it's caused by global warming.
Maybe it's part of global warming.
No idea. Yeah. No idea at this point. Here are a couple of the headlines today. This is from Meet the Press. This is from yesterday. They had a former police officer on there. It says, former top cop, America is sitting on a powder keg, which is a bad situation. I think that's not an exaggeration at all because of what's happened over the last few days. Charles Ramsey, he's a former D.C. police chief and one-time Philadelphia police commissioner, he said on NBC News Meet the Press that this is a volatile time for the nation. We are sitting on a powder keg, he said. You can call it a powder keg. You can say that we're handling nitroglycerin, which is a good analogy. Don't hear that word a lot, but of course that's that clear liquid that they'd use to blow up mountainsides and that type of thing with railroads.
Right.
Yep. You always see those movies where they're carrying nitroglycerin on their back. So very volatile substance. You have to be careful with it. He says, but obviously when you just look at what's going on, we're in a very, very critical point in the history of this country. So, of course, all those Sunday morning talk shows, we're going to talk about the racial issues, the police issues. And in here you have this former police officer, and he was Philadelphia police commissioner at one time. And saying that there was a really bad situation here in the U.S. And so, again, that like we mentioned, there were protests over the weekend. And it seems like it kind of naturally calms down a little bit, but then there's always something that sparks it. I mean, there was another headline today where I think it was a Black Lives Matter supporter of some kind broke into the house of a police officer because they had been arguing about the topic on Facebook, and then the guy that broke in, the Black Lives Matter supporter, got killed. He got shot. I haven't seen too much outrage about it because you go breaking into somebody's house, I mean, you're going to meet with problems. But it just shows that these arguments, they spiral. And, you know, I haven't seen really anybody having a calm, collected discussion about it and trying to come to some solution. It's just violence. Or even if it's not physical violence, it's the spirit of violence. So how are you going to come to a solution if that's the attitude?
Right. Yeah. I mean, anger, emotion, being charged up with a feeling does not lead well in negotiations or compromise or finding the middle ground. Like even some politicians have said, having partial judgment, not favoring one side or the other. Well, if you're just filled with emotions running off of how you feel about a situation or listening to what the charged rhetoric people are throwing around, is you're going to come to an impasse where both sides are equally set against each other. No one's going to budge an inch to try to find a solution or just to look at everything rationally. Because in a situation like this, it's what we're seeing is a nation being divided along lines of race or even employment, police officers and all that. When if you just sit down and think about the problem, it's not divided along those lines. It's divided along character. Some people don't have the right character. Some people do a lot of harm. But it's not based off of your race or anything else. But if you just believe your own emotions, or if you listen to all the different people who are trying to stir it up, especially, those words lead to actions, and that's what we're seeing. Is we're at a point where we might go past reconciliation and move towards open conflict, and we're getting very close to that. And once you get there, the only way you can stop conflict is with force. You can't negotiate your way out of it, and that's why it's so dangerous.
They have some numbers they reported here. The Post Wesley Lowry reported on Thursday that the number of fatal shootings by officers increased from 465 in the first 6 months of last year to 491 for the same period this year, which is a pretty minimal increase, according to an ongoing two-year study by the Washington Post. This year has also seen more officers shot and killed in the line of duty and more officers prosecuted for questionable shootings. And then he added that blacks continued to be shot at 2.5 times the rate of whites. About half of those killed were white and about half were minorities. Less than 10% of all those killed were unarmed. One quarter were mentally ill. So it is interesting if you do start looking at all of the numbers. It gives you some sort of maybe a picture of what's happening here. And also, you know, I've always thought that if there is a problem, say, with a certain officer here or there, and I think it's probably pretty rare, but if there is one, I think the best way to expose that is for everyone to really go above and beyond in obeying the law, right? Because then there's nothing questionable. If everyone obeys the law, everyone has the appearance of obeying the law, then you would find the person with the problem really quickly.
Right.
But when everyone's, even if they're not breaking the law, in a lot of cases some people act like they're breaking the law, then it makes it pretty muddled. So, I mean, the Bible talks about being above the appearance of evil. So what about that? You know, just don't look suspicious. Try not to do something that would raise, you know, the attention. And then if someone's, you know, acting unfairly, I think it would be pretty obvious pretty quickly, because people would say, well, that person wasn't doing anything. But sometimes it's, you know, no matter, I'm not even talking about race, just in general, behavior of people. You know, we've all been places where you think, well, that looks suspicious, or I don't want to go over there because I don't know what's going on. It looks bad, even if it's not. And so being above the appearance of evil, I think, would help everybody, whether officer, somebody that's stopped for a traffic stop or anything. If you're just above even the appearance of it, that would help the situation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a principle that spans any form of of conduct. I mean, if you're obeying the law, there is no possible. I mean, there are some people are wrongfully accused, and they do have to maybe have some unfair punishment. But most of the time, if you obey the law, you'll be fine. No one's going to bother you. And even if something happens, I mean, the truth will back you up too. I mean, if you're honestly obeying the law. And it is something to be said just about respecting law enforcement, doing what they say, just being, showing them respect, going above, and just being compliant as well. Because that goes a long way of avoiding situations where they have to get to the point where they need to use force, not even lethal force, is any kind of force. There is just something to be said about just obeying the law, and usually most of the time the law will take care of itself because there are checks and balances in place to stop corruption. And people might argue that those are broken or not, but you avoid these gray areas that we're seeing where one person, he has a past of, like, someone could have a past of breaking the law, or it looks like they're not doing something exactly right. And then you have the police, who might not necessarily know what to do, or they don't know exactly what's going on in the situation. So it creates this gray area where it's not black and white. But if you obey the law, like you said, it's black and white, pretty much.
I had a personal example like that years ago. I was driving, and I had a police officer pull me over, and they pulled me over because they said I didn't signal when I changed lanes. I have a little disagreement with that. I think I did, but they said I didn't, so fair enough. Anyway, they pulled me over for it, and the officer asked me if I could get my license. And I just gotten off of work, and I had it in my wallet, and I had put my wallet in my bag, and my bag was in the trunk. And so I told him, I said, well, you know, it's in the trunk, and explained it. And he said, okay, well, you can go get it. Well, I wasn't thinking anything. I just got out of the car, and I go back there and open the trunk, and I reach into the trunk, and he got really, you know, back away from your car. He put his hand on his gun. And then I did immediately what he said, and I realized why he did that, because he doesn't know what I have in the trunk. I could be reaching in there to grab anything. And so I immediately did what he said, no problem. It all worked out. We were okay. But, you know, I thought about it later, and I thought, wow, I just wasn't even thinking. You know, I should have been more cautious there, because this guy probably pulls over all kinds of people, and you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you don't know what they're pulling out of their trunk. So I wasn't upset about it, but I did take it as a personal, like, sort of correction. Like, I need to be more thoughtful about the fact that he doesn't know me, and he doesn't know what I would do or not do. And so, and I was getting off of work. I had a tie on. I mean, I looked like a, you know, somebody that was a law abiding, I assume. But even still, you just don't know. So that was a situation I had. I didn't take any offense at it towards the officer. I just thought, yeah, he has to be careful. And here I'm not thinking, and I'm just like jumping into my trunk of my car, and he's like, whoa, hang on a second, you know. So those things can happen, and it's a tough job. So anyway, it is interesting. I think we probably have all had a couple of situations where we get pulled over, and in most cases you can you know, move on. Not always, and if something goes wrong, then hopefully it is sorted out correctly. But it'll be interesting to see how this continues. But anyway, this former police officer there on Meet the Press, the former Philadelphia police commissioner, said it's a pretty volatile time and a powder keg. So the Trumpet Daily Radio Show talks about that. We will discuss that here in a little bit as well. Well, switching gears, Europe. Don't forget about Europe. They're still over there. Things are happening. This is a headline from CNBC. Germany's Merkel takes tough line on Brexit. She said the decision has been made. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has said she expects the UK to kick off its European Union exit negotiations as soon as a new prime minister is in place, and that there would be no turning back from the decision to leave the bloc. Speaking to national broadcaster ZDF on the weekend, Merkel warned that Britain would have to accept the good with the bad in its future relationship with the Union, and reiterated that there would be no cherry-picking, with the UK able to pick and choose which aspects of EU life it wanted to keep. She said the decision of Britain's to leave the EU has been taken, and the next step is, and Britain will do this only when they have a new prime minister, to invoke Article 50. She said, I expect that to happen. I deal with reality, and I firmly expect that application will be made. And then Merkel added that when asked if she thought there was a chance that Brexit would not happen. So she's said, nope, they made their decision. They'll be out of here. And by the way, you're not going to be able to cherry pick what you want. You're going to take the good with the bad. So that's diplomatic, I guess, but it is fairly strong worded.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, the other leaders have said similar things in the last few weeks. But I think it is interesting that she's being very authoritative on that. Like, she is the EU. and I mean, in a sense, she is. Germany is the head of that. And the more she talks about Brexit and about future of Britain and Europe, you can really see who really is controlling the future of Europe. And it's really in the hands of Germany.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't even thought of that when reading it. But yeah, she didn't make those comments as if, well, this is what I think from Germany. We'll see what everyone else thinks. She just said this is what how it's going to be. So that's pretty interesting insight into that. And like you said, they are the undisputed power over there. And that's being, I think, accepted and reported by just about everybody. Staying over there in Germany, they have their problems with the immigration issue. This is from the Washington Post. Leaked document says 2,000 men allegedly assaulted 1,200 German women on New Year's Eve. So you remember when that happened. That was a big news for a while. And the government tried to downplay it over there in Germany, like it the numbers weren't that big. But this new document shows what really happened. It says authorities now think that on New Year's Eve, more than 1,200 women were sexually assaulted in various German cities, including more than 600 in Cologne and about 400 in Hamburg. More than 2,000 men were allegedly involved, and 120 suspects, about half of them foreign nationals who had only recently arrived in Germany, have been identified. So they only know 120 of the identities, so out of 2,000. They say only four have been convicted, even though there are more trials underway. So this information coming out is not going to make the German people happy. They say officials have linked the sexual assaults to the influx of refugees. Holger Munch, president of the German Federal Crime Police Office, said there is a connection between the emergence of this phenomenon and the rapid migration in 2015. Many suspects had originally come to Germany from North African countries, rather than Syria, officials say. He also predicted that many of the New Year's Eve perpetrators will never be convicted. He said, when we have to presume that many of those crimes will never be fully investigated. So it's something that is public now. There's reports out there that show the numbers of people involved. Only four have been convicted, and they'll probably have a few more, but they don't even know who half of them are. Or more than half at this point. And even if they find out the identities, they don't think they'll do much about it. This is going to make the German populace that's probably already a little upset, even more upset, I think.
Yeah, this is really interesting in light of the German lawmakers passed a new resolution last week, a new rape law, or they redefine it. And it's called the No Means No Law, where if it's just making it easier for women to pursue rape charges, and it just makes it more definitive in language. So obviously that is in light of what's happened there on New Year's Eve, and this is definitely going to, I think, stir the pot again, because as much as the news has been focused on America the last couple of weeks, especially with Clinton and then the shootings, the immigrants aren't stopping. The migrants from North Africa, excuse me, and the Middle East. So it's an ongoing problem. And this is something that it's a big smear, I think, on Merkel's legacy and on her government, because if 120, that's, what is that, like 5% of 2,000, something like that. If you only can prosecute, or no, if you only can identify 5% of them, only prosecute four so far, I mean, that's, people aren't going to be in favor of how you deal with them and putting foreigners' rights above your own people.
Yeah, it's an ongoing problem over there. And as you say, the headlines have focused so much on the U.S. lately, and rightfully so, but that's an ongoing issue over there in Germany. So you couple that with the Brexit and everything kind of shifting over there in Europe, it's going to be very interesting next few months ahead. So thetrumpet.com will have a lot more information on all of these topics, and of course the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as well, and the Key of David program, so you can get a lot of good information there. One last headline here today. The U.S., this is from CNN.com, the U.S. has the highest car crash death rate, according to the CDC. But there is a little bit of progress, they think. So not surprising, I don't think. It seems like every night on the news, no matter where you live, there's always an accident, or it could be a fatality. They say more people die in car crashes each year in the United States than in any other high-income country, according to the Center for Disease Control. This is a report from last Wednesday. In 2013, more than 32,000 people died on U.S. roads, roughly 90 fatalities a day, according to the CDC. The U.S. has seen a 31% reduction in its motor vehicle death rate per capita over the past 13 years, so it's improved. But compared with 19 other wealthy countries, which have declined an average of 56% during the same period, the U.S. has the slowest decrease. Road death rates in countries such as Spain and Denmark have dropped 75.1% and 63.5% respectively, which is pretty amazing. The United States also performed badly in other measures. It ranks first in crash deaths per 100,000 people and per 10,000 registered vehicles. It's the second highest after Canada. Canada's topped us in this. In the percentage of deaths involving alcohol, 31%. So Canada's even higher, which is surprising to me. And the United States is the third lowest after Austria and Belgium in national front seatbelt use at 87% among the 20 countries. So their recommendation is slow down, wear a seatbelt, and don't drive drunk, which that's good practical advice.
It is.
They didn't mention anything about texting in there, but that could be an issue, or just phone use in general.
Yeah, it is interesting looking at these stats because nowadays I think there's more ways to be distracted than ever driving a car. I mean, a lot of people get in accidents just switching the radio or the CD track or flipping through songs on their iPod, however they listen to music, or and talking on the cell phone, texting, even just talking with people. So it is interesting, and I think all of us, if we've been to the DMV recently or just driving every day, you can see why there are so many accidents, because I mean, every day you see people not using their blinker, don't stop at a stop sign, texting, just not even paying attention, shaving while they're driving. I mean, any number of things you see every day. So I'm not surprised that by the slightest, and in Canada it's the same. It's the same kind of habits.
I had a situation last week, I think it was, where I was driving, and I think the speed limit was about 45, so people are roughly going 50, somewhere in there. And there was a person in front of me, and I left, there was enough, decent space between us, maybe four or five car lengths, and they turned right into a store they wanted to go into, I guess. And they pulled in there, and then they decided they wanted to go into a different store. So they pulled right back out into the road. And thankfully, I was far enough back to where I wasn't immediately right there. But that we would have had a car crash right there. Just silly. You know, just not thinking. Just, oh, I don't want to go here. I want to go over here. And that's one of the things I see probably the most when I'm driving, is people want to get somewhere, and they're not really paying attention to the flow of traffic. Like, does it make sense to go that way, or would it make sense to go a different way? Even if it's takes you a little longer, it will prevent the backup of traffic, or like in this case, just whipping right back out into the road. So that can always be a problem. And years ago when I lived in Wisconsin, drunk driving was a really big thing back there. So they got really serious about it, to where I don't remember how many times, but if you get caught once or maybe more than once, you would lose your license forever. Like, you could never drive again because there were so many fatalities. It might have been three. I don't remember for sure. But we used to work an overnight shift at a radio station, and on the weekend. So I would come home 6:30 in the morning, and that was a bad time.
Yeah.
I remember seeing all kinds of, I don't know if it was alcohol or what, but cars just weaving all over the road. And so you really do have to watch those types of things. And I know those tougher laws did help there in Wisconsin. But you know what's funny about that? Even though people stopped drinking and driving, they'd start snowmobiling and drinking.
Right.
Because snowmobiling's big up there. And you drive in the winter past a bar, and there's 30 snowmobiles lined up. And then they have those trails they go on. They can go 30, 40, 50 miles an hour on those trails. And they're drunk, and then inevitably you always hear about them hitting a tree or hitting somebody else. So it can be a real problem, whether it's driving a car or operating another vehicle or even a boat or any of those things. Once you start mixing in some of that alcohol, you're just not safe, then you see those numbers just spike.
Yeah. In Canada, there's lots of that too. Especially where I used to live in Alberta, like there's lots of ranches around and people who have money. So there's lots of ATVs, four-wheelers, and they bring them to parties and they drive around after drinking. And a lot of accidents, running the barbed wire, hitting fences, going off of, if it's dark, going off into a gorge or a ravine. So that sort of thing is, I mean, it's foolish as well, but even I used to handle a little bit of heavy equipment, like forklifts and that sort of thing in the warehouse. And even seeing people's approach to how they drive those, they kind of know what they're doing, but they're like, I got this, don't worry. And they like knock lights, glass comes down from the ceiling, almost knock over a pallet that's three stories up that could kill someone. I mean, all these different types of things, and that's their attitude towards driving a vehicle too, where you don't really know what you're doing. You have the idea, but you don't have enough experience, or you just don't have the right attitude while you're doing it. And there's just that one little microcosm I could see why there's so many problems on the road, because people don't approach it with the right attitude in mind.
Yeah. My grandpa always had a expression where basically you have to assume the other person's going to do the wrong thing. Something right. To that effect, and I've remembered that, and it's helped me a lot of times, because you come up to a certain situation, and I think, I wonder what this person's going to do, and a lot of times it is like the wrong move, or it's the unexpected move, and you do have to leave enough room, you know, and that type of thing. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you're on the highway, and it's just bumper to bumper, and you know, you stop and think to yourself a little bit, like, wow, one thing goes wrong here, and we're in a world of trouble.
Yeah.
And that does happen sometimes, just mistakes, you know. So anyway, got to be careful out there. Thankfully, the numbers have come down somewhat, but they're still a little higher than they should be, I suppose. I saw the other day one of, you know, they have these self-driving cars.
Right.
Which I don't understand those, but they had a fatality from the self-driving car.
Yeah.
I think it was the first fatality, and I didn't read too much about it, but I thought, well, yeah, I mean... I don't know. They kind of have some of that technology built into a lot of cars where, you know, they'll back up or they'll parallel park for you. I just don't trust it. I just think, like, what happens if the machine makes a mistake, you know? Or they have a lot of cars now have the camera where you can just look in the screen, and when you back up, I still don't look in that thing. I still turn around and look. I just don't trust it. Even yeah. though, because it, I don't know, I just feel better if I'm in control. At least if I make a mistake, then I know I made it, you know. So, I don't know much about those self-driving cars. We'll see if that takes off or not.
Yeah, I think those are, because I've been following that as well. And it's Tesla. They have some new self-driving cars. And there's been fatality, but I think three or four accidents over the last couple of weeks since people have been starting using it. And they're just people... the comments on them are pretty funny, because I'm like, well, you're not driving the car. That's why it crashed. Like,
right.
And just the idea that a computer can make the same decisions a human driver can make, it can't. It is this one of those things, too, where why would you want to give up control? Like, there's some things humans should just always do that you shouldn't automate or give to other processes, and I think driving's one of those for sure, where the human should be in control. And most people like driving anyway. I wouldn't want to sit in a car where I couldn't drive. I mean,
yeah,
it'd just be just an odd. I'd feel like I was in a jail traveling at 70 miles an hour around other vehicles traveling that fast.
Yeah.
Without control.
I can't read in a car anyway when it's moving. It makes me feel a little motion sick, I guess. So I don't know what I would do. Just look out the window, I guess. I'd be like being a kid again.
Right.
Having your dad drive you everywhere. Yeah. They should call him the dad car. Yeah, it'd be interesting. Those are some of the headlines for today. That'll do it for us on Trumpet Radio Live today. Myself, Dwight Falk, Abraham Blondeau, have a great rest of your Monday, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.